I started in photography. I was always around pictures growing up. And I was fortunate enough that my parents bought me a fairly nice camera when I was young. And one of the things I almost immediately started doing was going to rock concerts and photographing those. And it sort of grew out of rock concerts and sporting events, and I just became a professional photographer. I worked for my local newspaper, and then I went to university to study photography and photojournalism. And I spent most of my professional shooting career working for newspapers, first at the Miami News in Miami, Florida, and then at the Dallas Morning News in Dallas, Texas. And I took a buyout from Dallas. Oh, it's been 12 years ago now, and became a college professor 10 years ago, and I have not looked back.
That was an incredibly good bounce there.
Yeah. Well, when I was a shooter. I was a photographer until 1998, and then in 1998, I became an editor and then a manager. And so, when I originally arrived at the Dallas Morning News in 1983, I was a staff photographer, and eventually I became the director of photography and ran the department. And at that time, the department was 50 people and had an extremely large budget for travel and salaries and all of that. It was one of the best photo departments in the country. But I began shooting the Who. As I said, I shot a lot of rock and roll concerts when I was in high school. We were really lucky. I lived in a town that had, it was sort of B plus, A minus groups. And actually, a lot of the big groups, a couple of them on their way up, I missed. Zeppelin was there, Hendrix was there, but I was a little too young for those things. And actually, the Who had been there in the late 60s, I think. But this was in southern Indiana, northern Kentucky in the mid-70s. And I shot just a lot of things there and was fortunate enough in 1976 to photograph the Who one time from way up in the rafters in Denver, Colorado, at the end of a spring break. And then I didn't photograph them again until the summer of 1980. I photographed them in 1980 and then 82 and 83. And then again in 1989, and I had an interview and a portrait session with Pete Townsend in 1993 at the theater where Tommy was playing in New York. And then we hit it off really, really well there. And we kind of corresponded for a while. If you have to remember, 93 was just about the beginning of the internet. And so email really wasn't a thing yet, and because it wasn't a thing yet, and I was moving around a fair bit at that time, we kind of lost track. And then we reconnected in 2000 during his two Lifehouse performances in London with the London Philharmonic, and I knew that they were going to go on tour, and he had a new website, and he was talking about a lot of content that he planned to put on the website. And so I went to the first show in Chicago of the tour, and this was the first quote unquote real Who tour since the Farewell tour in '82. Now, yes, they toured in 1989, and that they toured Tommy and with all the musicians and everything, and I understand Pete many times referred to that as the Who on Ice.
Right.
But they also played a lot of Pete solo songs and things like that too. And then of course they toured some Quadrophenia in the mid-90s. But as far as just a self-contained unit and called themselves the Who, it was 2000. And so I went to that show, and then I got up the next day and looked at the website, and there was nothing new. And so I went and kind of went over to the hotel where Pete was staying and then ran into him in the motor lobby and said, "Hey, can I help out? Is there anything you need me to do for the website?" And he was like, "Well, can you come to Detroit tonight?" And I said, "Well, sure. if you want me to come for sure, I can do it, because I'll have to leave right now and drive over there. And he said, well, let me check into things. You know, can you, you know, we can take you over. Maybe we can take you over on the jet. And I said, okay, but how am I going to get back? And he said, oh, well, we'll just come back here anyway. So I waited about, I left him, and about 30, 35 minutes later, I got a phone call and said, okay, you're on the plane and be back at the hotel at such and such a time. And that was sort of the beginning of me working with the Who back in 2000.
And when you were on the plane with them that first time, obviously you'd been around famous people before, but John Bundrick, their keyboard player, has worked with me for a number of years, and mm-hmm. he, you know, had stories about how it could be on the plane and that sort of stuff. When you were first on the plane, were you kind of just a wallflower and observing, or did they start, you know, BSing with you right at the beginning?
Well, I mean, it was one of those things where I kind of tried to do my job, because I saw my job as providing some imagery for Pete's website. So I started taking pictures. And if you actually search on YouTube, during that tour, Pete produced a handful of short tour videos.
Oh, they were
called
great.
Video Diaries. And so he photographed me, you know, he videotaped me shooting pictures, and, you know, we sort of did this very meta thing. I shot him, he shot me, and, you know, and teased me a little bit, and vice versa. I mean, it was, but it was, you know, it was a daytime flight, so it was a relatively quiet thing. I mean, you got to keep in mind, by the time I joined The Who, they were already, you know, in their 50s, and there wasn't a lot of craziness, as, you know, as you've heard about in the early, early days. Pete was sober, and Roger didn't do anything anyway, and John just kind of kept it to after the shows.
And it's after that initial meeting and shooting those initial shows and trying getting some content on his website, mm-hmm. and those videos you mentioned, by the way, are fantastic. I still periodically will go on YouTube to find them.
Yeah.
When that tour was over, did you remain in contact, or did you get a call or any kind of warning when a tour was coming?
I remained in contact. You know, it became one of those things where it was just like, it would go in and out. I didn't, you know, he brought me out to Southern California on the second leg, and I did four or five dates out there. I did most of the nights that they were at Madison Square Garden, and I did a few other one-off kind of things. Dallas, Houston, I think I went to Cleveland. I don't know, I probably shot them a dozen times on that 2000 tour. And I went to England, I went to London a couple of times and photographed them at Royal Albert Hall and London Arena and Wembley and a couple other places like that. And then it got kind of quiet. I mean, I kept in touch, but it got kind of quiet, you know, and then John died the next year, you know, on the next tour. And the big issue for me was, at that point, I was still working at the Dallas Morning News, and I was deeply ensconced in what was then a different career. I was moving up the ladder of management, so I didn't have as much flexibility as I had had. So from roughly 2002 to, well, until I stopped working at the paper until 2006, I only saw them sporadically. Pete and I kept in touch. But as would have it, as luck would have it, I mean, I had done a couple other shows in between during that really big 2006-2007 tour. And then Pete sent me a note and said, you know, you want to come out with us? Can you come out for, you know, multiple days? And I said, yeah, when do you want me to come? They were still in the midst of that first leg, and I said, I can join you in Canada next week if you want. He said, no, we can wait till the next leg. So in 2006, I went out on the road with them for about 10 weeks at the end of the year, did a couple more dates in 2007, and then I moved up here to Rochester, New York in 08, and they were kind of quiet. They did, you know, some European stuff, and I guess I think Japan was around that time. I don't remember everything off the top of my head anymore. But then they came back and started, you know, hitting the tours pretty hard in 12, 13, 14, that. And so actually being up here in the Northeast was a lot easier to go to a lot of spots than it was down in Texas, because if they weren't hiring me, I would just go and do things on my own. And sometimes what would happen is I would start out doing things for myself, and then they would end up hiring me to continue doing whatever it was that I was doing. And I've done everything for them, from to shoot their grip and grins to provide stuff for their programs, the website stuff. It just depends on what they need and when they need it. But for, you know, pretty much the last 6 years, I've made it a point of being around and being available, and sometimes they use me and sometimes they don't. And if they come close by, and they do, I mean, I remember one leg, they were in Toronto twice, they were in Cleveland, they were in, they were in New York, they were in Buffalo, I mean, not Buffalo, they were in New York, they were in Boston, D.C., Philadelphia, and those are all fairly easy for me to get to when I have, you know, free time. And then, so, it just depends. Sometimes I do it on my own, and sometimes they say, hey, we need you, come do this.
In the book, your recent book, Joined Together with the Band, when did you first get the idea that you wanted to do a collection of your Who photography as a book?
Well, I mean, as a photographer, I think, you know, we always think about publishing books, but I it was one of those things where my career has covered so many different things. I mean, I've done a lot more than just rock concerts and things like that. When I worked at the newspapers, I did a lot of big-time sports. I've been to, I think, 5 or 6 Olympics, and I've been to, I don't know, 3 Super Bowls, and I've been to NBA championships and the playoffs and the Final Four and NHL, all, you know, Stanley Cup and all of that stuff, and I've done stories about AIDS around the world, and I've done stories about, I spent 5 weeks on the Trans-Siberian Railroad. I was happened to be in Russia when they, actually at that point it was the Soviet Union. I was in the Soviet Union when the military tried to throw out the leader, and so I spent, that was a different 5-week trip that I spent in the former Soviet Union. So I've done all kinds of different things, and of course the idea of doing a book is always there, because we always think that we are good enough to have a book. But when it came to the Who, you know, I guess it was always buried in the back of my head after a certain point, because people kept saying, well, all right, are you working for the Who this time? I'm like, no. Then why are you here? I don't know. I just want to shoot pictures. I want to try to, you know, who knows, maybe someday I'll do a book. I don't know. You know, that sort of thing. And I kind of got to the point where I thought I had enough, and I had enough variety, and the pictures went back to that very first concert in 76, and I had enough from the interim years, and we just thought it was the right time. And, you know, I think they're winding down. They may or may not ever go back on the road again as the Who, but, you know, there's always rumors, so stay tuned. But I think at this point, you know, I still continue to shoot them. I shot Pete Squadrofinia. I shot Rogers Tommy. If they go back out again, you know, in the next year, I'll go out and do what I can do and whatever they want me for or don't want me for. And, you know, as a photographer, one of the nicest things you can do, I mean, everybody can put up a website, but to have a book that people like, and it seems that at least the fans really, really like it, and I'm very proud of it. I think it's beautifully done. really, really good. It's reproduced. The reproduction in it is amazing, and it's a high quality product with high quality paper and high quality binding. And for, you know, sort of the average people don't think about that too much, but I'm sure you've bought books in the past where if you look at them enough, they fall apart pretty easily. This one won't do that. And I'm really proud of it. You know, I wouldn't say it's the culmination of my life's work, but it's certainly pretty much the culmination of my work with The Who. That doesn't mean I won't keep working with them, but, you know, I think we hit a point where I think there's going to be diminishing returns as far as new imagery is concerned.
As far as the Who camp, who was Pete the first one that you got any feedback from, or was it Roger?
Well, I always have, my relationship has, you know, it's really funny. Things have changed a little bit. My relationship started with Pete. I mean, I met him for the first time back in 1980. In those days, I worked for a newspaper in the summer, and if you had a photo pass, it got you back. You could shoot the whole show and you got backstage. So I met Pete in the summer of 1980. Back in those days, again, a photo pass allowed you to shoot the entire show and got you backstage afterwards. So I went back there and I met Pete. And he and I, you know, even back then, hit it off really well. And I stood there and talked to him for about 30, 40 minutes. And it was really funny. It wasn't like there were a lot of people hanging around trying to talk to him or anything like that. But we got along really well, and then I did this interview with him, and we hit it off really well. It was supposed to be one of those things where I was supposed to be done. I was supposed to have 1 hour to interview him. And, you know, at 5 minutes till that 1 hour, his PA came in and said, okay, you know, 5 minutes, wrap it up. Well, she came in 5 minutes later, and Pete shooed her away and said, give us a little more time. And then, you know, and then she came in again, and Pete shooed her away and said, give us a little more time. And then finally she said, look, you know. So we did that, and then we went and made pictures, and so we just always hit it off. I mean, I think very, very highly of him. I try not to talk about stupid things to him, and you know, he's a really, really smart guy. But the interesting thing that I noticed in going back through all of my pictures is that ultimately I ended up spending, after that 2000 tour, I ultimately ended up spending more time with Roger in social settings than I have with Pete. So I have sort of the same relationship with both of them, but they're different, if that makes any sense. You know, Roger wanders the halls more than Pete does. You know, Pete has a tendency now to just sort of, you know, go to his dressing room and stay in there, and it's not like it was when I first started where I could just barge in, and I respect that. But Roger's around a lot, and, you know, and he's taken me to a couple of parties, he's taken me to dinner, we've had some meals together. And so, you know, the relationships have changed somewhat, but, for example, I've had a couple of emails in the last few weeks with Pete, just small pitter-patter, nothing major. And, you know, it's nice to hear from him. And then there'll be times where I'll send Pete emails and I'll never hear, and I won't hear from him for months. And I've talked to other people that say the same thing happened to them. So, you know, I wouldn't say that we're close, but, you know, there's always a warm greeting and glad to see you and looking forward to seeing you again sort of thing. And, you know, at this point in my life and my career, and, you know, having been a huge fan of the band anyway, I can't ask for much more.
Did you ever interact with Rabbit? I know him. I know, obviously, if you were shooting them, you were around him, but...
Yes, I used to, you know, the thing was, is I spent some time with him in 2000, and then especially in 2006, in the run-up to that leg and all the dates before that leg, I saw him. The problem was, if you remember, his wife became very ill.
Right.
And so he was not on that last leg. But, you know, we hung out because he wandered around backstage, and we hung out some, and we talked a fair bit. during all those shows in between, and it was always great. I really enjoyed his company, and I really miss him and the band.
Yeah, I do too.
I thought he, you know, while I really like Lauren Gold, you know, I miss his personality and what he brings to the band, which is always a little extra poking of Pete and challenging him musically every night.
Yeah, I bring Rabbit up because he's been incredibly nice to us. He plays on every album we make, and and his accent, he's from Texas, but he's lived in England for so long, so his accent is like half Texas, half London.
I know, it's really annoying.
It's like, how you
do? Because when I first started hanging out with him in 2000, you know, it's like, wait a minute, what are you doing? What the hell is with this accent? You know, and I would tease him about it occasionally, you know. But yeah, no, I really like Rabbit, and I wish he was still around. Again, that's not to slight Lauren. I really like Lauren. He and I are buddies, and he's an amateur photographer, so he's always asking me about his gear and about pictures and stuff. And I really, you know, he's a great musician, and so, you know, they're both really, really good. It's just the other thing is, I love Lauren, and he's got some stories, but I mean, Rabbit's got some real stories.
Yeah, I've been trying for a couple of years off and on to get him in contact with someone who could do an autobiography on him, because stories he's told me that I'm not going to repeat, those, they're his stories.
Oh yeah, of course.
But they're, you know, between The Who and Bob Marley and all those, and Johnny Nash. There's several books in Rabbit's head.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, I've even just seen some of the interviews that he's done about Marley and that album, and especially, and it's just fascinating stuff. It's fascinating stuff.
And the weird thing is, Rabbit, you know, even to this day, is probably in the top two Hammond rock keyboard players on the planet.
Oh yeah.
I mean, if you meet him, there's no air of, you wouldn't think he'd ever played in anything bigger than a Holiday Inn, just based on the way he treats people.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, and the other thing that I love about Rabbit is that, now I never saw that, but I've heard a few stories about Rabbit, you know, that he fit in perfectly with The Who in the 80s, in the early 80s.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know. And, you know, and I'm happy that he sobered up, and I'm happy that, you know, it's not an issue for him any longer. But, yeah, I heard a couple of things where it sounded like he was trying to, you know, equal or outdo Moon on a few things.
Well, he's very vigilant about staying sober, to the point that the time we met you and we were stuck in a taxi, when the UN was in, the president was in town for the UN, and the taxi wouldn't move. Rabbit was very gracious enough to have some of us up to his room, and when we got there, he was on the phone with the front desk telling them, "You have to get the booze out of the refrigerator and get it out of here."
Yeah,
he was that serious about it.
Oh yeah, well, you know, when you're fighting that stuff, you don't, you know, you don't want any temptation around, especially if you realize that, you know, for whatever reason, it opens itself up to you. So that's the thing I really, you know, I really admire about him. And you know, and I was really, I had met his wife a couple of times. She was on the tour in 2000 for a little bit. So actually, I have a couple of pictures of the two of them together. And it, you know, and I think I might have pictures of them from 2006 too, because I kind of did the same thing. I ended up going to, yeah, if I'm not mistaken, I ended up going to, no, I was in Chicago and they took me to Des Moines. You know, it was like, what are you doing here? And I said, well, I'm just shooting stuff. Well, you want to go to Des Moines with us? Sure. You know, that sort of thing.
For people who haven't purchased the book yet, what is the preferred retail outlet of choice for you as far as for people who want to order a copy of the book?
Well, let me say this, folks. I want you all to understand is that you can buy this book at the regular outlet. But 50% of our profits go to Teen Cancer America, which is Pete and Roger's big charity in the United States that supports, that is, their mission is to build cancer wards for teenagers across the United States. Now, some folks may know about TCT, the Teen Cancer Trust in Great Britain, that they started probably 20 years ago. The story is Roger became aware that a teenager with cancer is usually either in the pediatrics ward or with grown-ups, and teenagers don't fit in either one of those places. So he set about with Pete and then John, Teen Cancer Trust in Great Britain, to build these wards across Great Britain. Well, I can't remember how many years ago that they built out the UK. And around the same time, I don't know if it's coincidentally or planned or what, they turned their eyes towards the United States. And they've been building, through fundraising, they've been building these wards all across the United States. So, back to the original question. So, what I encourage everybody to do is go to our website, www.joinedtogetherwiththebook.com. It's kind of cumbersome, but think the book is called Join Together with the Band. So www.joinedtogetherwiththebook.com, and there you can order the book. And we appreciate that. It obviously it ups our margins a little bit and allows us to write a larger check to TCA.
And you mentioned John in there. I realized we hadn't spoken, talked about Entwistle that much. And I know you said he kind of kept to himself or seemed to. Do you have an Entwistle anecdote people may not have heard?
Well,
that you can repeat.
I didn't hang around with John much backstage. For whatever reason, maybe it was because his dressing room door was always closed or something. I didn't hang around with him much backstage, but I did go out with him several times after shows. And the great thing about John was, but also ultimately was his downfall, was he was a big party guy. He was a lot of fun. And I went out with him several times after shows and hung out with him. And the thing is we'd go to these places and they'd get crowded and they'd get really noisy. And because John's ears were bad, and going worse, his speech was getting a little funky. And it was hard enough when it was clear to understand everything he said. But you put the noise, and then you put, beer and whatever else, champagne, brandy, whatever else he was drinking in there. And it was, at least for me in my ear, it was nearly impossible to understand what he said. But he would lean in and he would say something, and instead of me going, what? Because he'd lean in, he'd say something, he'd start laughing, and I would just start laughing, But you couldn't help but laugh, because it was just, the whole thing was just so much fun. And the spirit of the place was just really, really fun. Unfortunately, as we all know, John had a little too much fun. And, I was really worried about him during that 2000 tour. And, this was a guy who at 50, whatever it was, mid-50s in 2000, was out there partying hard every night after every show. And this was just what he was doing in public at the bars. I don't know what he was doing afterwards in the hotel suite. No, he was a great guy, and when we were out and things like that, he was always very sweet and always very welcoming. So those are my few memories of John.
Do you have any upcoming projects that you would want to let people know about, or are you kind of focusing on the academia?
Well, right now I'm focusing on the academia. Actually, right now, I don't know when you folks are going to hear this. Right now, we're just finishing up classes, and so I have a bunch of grading I have to do. I have to see what's going to happen this sounds kind of silly, but I have to see what's going to happen with the Who. I mean, I kind of want to be available if they're going to be around, whether they want me or I just go on my own. I want to see what's going on, but there are some things that, depending upon what happened with the Who, that I want to be able to do in the next few years, have nothing to do with rock and roll. They're just photography sort of things. There's a textbook on picture editing and design I want to do, and I'd like to go shoot photograph Cajun Mardi Gras again, and which I did once back in the early 90s. I want to go back and photograph that again, and you know, we'll see what else happens out there. I mean, I'm about to hit the big C